On the Big Breakfast catch-up with Claire, Matt and Kimber, our extended chat with a wonderful Marcus Mumford from Mumford & Sons.
We take your calls on mental health.
And Janelle Koenig returns with Mum's the Word.
Wake up with the Big Breakfast. Claire, Matt and Kimber. Weekdays from 6am on Mix 94.5.
This Big Breakfast catch-up is for Allianz Home and Motor Insurance. Allianz.
Singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, funny man, great man, Marcus Mumford. How are you, mate?
Funny man?
Yeah.
Wow.
I reckon you're a funny bugger.
Oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, go. Go for it.
No, I'll try not to. Well, I don't know. I'm not feeling very funny today.
All right.
I'm not putting pressure on, but I saw you with that film.
Well, that is pressure. When you introduce someone as a funny man, that is the definition of pressure.
Okay, well, I'll withdraw the funny man. I'll just say, good bloke. How are you, mate?
No, why don't you start with expectations? Real wanker, Marcus Mumford. Here he is.
Written more hits than Springsteen. Marcus Mumford.
Thanks.
No pressure, brilliant. Champ.
Marcus, it is great to have you with us. Now, you guys have been tucked away in a converted church with a string orchestra, a huge mixing desk, perfecting your new, fourth album. How has writing and recording changed from when you began? Do you still use traditional ways of creating? Are you still a pen to paper kind of guy?
I still haven't figured out a way to do it that is consistent and that gives consistent results. So I'm still trying to figure out. I think we're all still trying to figure out how you write songs, because it always feels accidental. However, professional you try and be, I can never remember the moment that lyrics paired up with melody. I can just never. It's always in a bit of a blur that it happens, and sometimes it literally is in dreams that it happens. So I don't think we've figured out exactly how to do it. What's different has been our attitude towards the studio and the fact that we've been able to give it a bit more time. Like the first record, we had to record in 6 weeks on a shoestring budget of borrowed money, and you know there was no time for sort of messing about. You know, late Friday nights, getting quite pissed and trying out a new drum machine, stuff like that, because we were just on we had a tour booked, and Dravs was like being really generous with his time and doing it for free at the time. So, you know, there wasn't, whereas now there is, you know, we made sure that we built enough time into recording so that we could take our time with it a bit, and that affects your creative decisions inevitably. Hopefully you can avoid being too indulgent, but it's certainly changed. Like we spent a lot of time just hanging out at the studio and talking and listening to other people's records, and that I think filtered down to the creative process as well. So
And Marcus, you were saying earlier that you have fond memories of Australia. Back in the early days, you came out here not realizing perhaps how popular you were here. Can you reflect on your visits here?
I always get a sense of excitement getting off the plane in Australia. And I'm not just saying that because I'm here talking to you. But no, I really do, because it was the first place we came as a band where we were sort of met with a really warm reception, sort of in the streets and at the airport and stuff. And it was the first country outside of our own to really embrace our music in a really enthusiastic way. We landed, and the next day we did the Triple J Hottest 100 thing, which kind of was a bit mind-blowing. Mm. And it was all just a bit of a whirlwind, and our shows here have always been so fun. And it's because it's literally on the other side of the world to where we're from, and the fact that people know, some people might know or like our music, is still a bit mind-blowing to me. So I get off the plane here and I think, right, I'm on the other side of the world. Let's get to work. Let's make it really good. So this trip's literally just 2 days, and I'm on my lonesome this time because the other lads are all busy doing important things, but I was sort of free and said I'd come. And I'm really glad I did.
Talk about the album Delta. Mate, I bored these two silly over the past 12 months, because in Perth, Western Australia, we never got to see Bruce Springsteen for so long. And eventually,
did he not come?
Well, in 2014, he finally came. Wow. He's in his 60s, right?
That's a long time to wait.
Then he came again last year, and I got to interview him, and I got Springsteen to laugh. And the weirdest thing is him looking you in the eye when he's answering a question. You can't look away. It's the boss.
Yeah.
But you have a better Springsteen story. Can you share that with us?
Which one? The Hungry Heart one?
You have to tell us the Hungry Heart story. That is gem.
Well, You've got more than one Bruce Springsteen story. Yeah, I think that says everything.
I'm just flicking through my
Well, didn't you have you had the CD in the car as kids, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we listened to Springsteen more than anyone else in the car together as a family growing up. So he's probably the songwriter in my life who means the most and has been the most consistently sort of present in my life. I went and saw his Broadway show. He played Tougher Than the Rest. I cried, etc. But he invited us first time we met Bruce Springsteen. he invited us on stage. Well, we were all quite pissed at a festival in Belgium, and I didn't realise till the last song that he'd watched our set from side of stage, and he was there in his sunglasses, and I shat myself and then forgot the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. And then we went backstage, and he came and said, you know, he was really nice, and then we're on stage watching his show, and we know his saxophone player a little bit, Jake. And halfway through the set, he like beckons in our general direction. I thought he was like trying to find someone behind us who was much cooler than we are. Like,
get a stage manager, there's something wrong.
Yeah. And it was, turns out he was beckoning us on stage for Hungry Heart, and he gave me the microphone and I completely forgot the lyrics.
Oh no.
Yeah, and there was a teleprompter, which I realised too late that there was a teleprompter on stage, and it's really difficult to forget the lyrics to Hungry Heart.
Got a wife and kids.
But I just froze up. So I grabbed the closest maracas and maraca'd my way through it.
Do you think he knew? Do you think the boss was onto you when you didn't come?
I like to think I got away with it, but I'm sure he noticed. When you can't remember the words to Hungry Heart, you're in trouble.
No, that's when you just point the mic to the crowd and then they all do it for you. Robbie Williams style.
There was some poor Belgian behind you going, no, he was telling me to come on.
Exactly.
Yeah, like a newsreader.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Marcus, the elation that comes from playing, and I mean when you're really caught up in it. You know, I've seen some live sets of you guys where you just go absolutely berserk. Consecutive gigs like a chase for that feeling again, or does the feeling just kick in naturally when you start playing?
I think we're still chasing that feeling for sure. I think we spend most of our time trying to chase that feeling. Like I said, we have fallen back in love with the studio. So we used to just, the studio used to be sort of an inconvenience to us. Like we'd have to go in and record more songs so that we could go on tour again. And we treat our albums like adverts for our live shows. Now I think we really do enjoy being in the studio and making that creative journey together. It's really fun. But we are sort of adrenaline addicts, and shows are the best adrenaline rush ever. I mean, even the bad ones are still better than doing anything else with your time. Yes. Do you know what I mean? So we're always chasing it, and we've all got really short attention spans and ADHD. So we're always trying to change it. Our production manager talks about it like it's like anything could go wrong at any second, and that's sort of what makes it fun. And we're always changing these. We're always trying to collaborate with people we tour with as well, and bring people on stage and make it different every night. And live music's just amazing, man, and it's never been healthier, you know. So we're pretty stoked to come back here, and we just announced a bunch of dates this week. So we're ramping up to go on tour again, and it's gonna be fun.
Marcus, Delta will be released on the 16th of November, certainly here. Tell us about the new album.
Well, it's our fourth album, and it's the one that I'm the most proud of, and it's definitely the one we've worked hardest on. So it's quite long; it's 14 songs. Mm. I had to listen to it. Normally when you make records, you sort of work really hard, you listen to them relentlessly, they're obsessions, and then you finish them and you never listen to them ever again. Mm-hmm. I've never gone back and listened to any of our records. This one, I had to listen to it yesterday, playing it to someone in LA, and you know, it's a long music, it's like an hour.
You're like, this is good, let's go get a sandwich.
But I'm still not sick of it yet, and that's good. I'm really proud of it. I think we're trying to do more with it than we've tried in the past. I think Guiding Light, the single, is probably the most relatable song off the record, like the one that sounds most like familiar to people who know our music, but the least sort of experimental, and there's some pretty weird moments on it, which we really like.
Okay, so the title Delta, is some Delta blues in there? You're channeling Muddy Waters?
No, it's not really about blues. I mean, it's the fourth letter of the alphabet in phonetic and Greek. But I was on my bike on the way to the studio thinking about it, and it just sort of felt like, over the past couple of years, since we released Wilder Mind, I've been in the labor ward twice with my kids, and I've been at the deathbed once, and all of those things felt like the fucking wild to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess trying to distill four writers, because we all write in the band, four writers worth of lives over 3 years. You've got like 12 years, if my maths is correct, and I'm really bad at maths, but you've got about 12 years of adult life to write about. Yep. So we're writing about a whole range of different stuff, but it certainly felt more like the last sort of 5 years at least on the road, but really the last 10 on the road, we've lived quite a sheltered life in lots of ways because we haven't been around family. We haven't been at home as much. The last year and a half, I mean, last year was kind of a quiet year touring wise. We still played like 70 shows, but that's the quietest year we've ever had.
Wow.
But we were at home more and we experienced more real life stuff, right? We were less protected from the ins and outs of friends and family's lives and getting into our own sticky messes and stuff.
You were talking about your mates in the band. They're bloody good songwriters along with yourself, aren't they, mate?
They're my favourite three songwriters in the world, mate. So I feel very privileged. But also, I think we try to make it so that everyone can feel creatively invested in the band. And it means that we make a competition between songs and not writers. And we're getting better at that as well, I think. I think a few years ago, you know, when you're a bit insecure and you're still a pretty young band, even though I still feel like kind of an adolescent band now. I think you're an adult band once you made five records. But yep. I think it was always kind of like you felt an urgency to push your own ideas and not listen as much to others because there wasn't as much trust, inevitably. Mm. I think we're in a place now where if Ben's got an idea that I instinctively don't really like, I'm much more willing now because of my trust in him as a person, as a songwriter, as a friend and a bandmate to follow his idea. And I don't think there's really ever an example on this last record where someone had a really passionate idea that they saw through that eventually the rest of us didn't believe in as well.
Yes.
So
cool.
That's really cool because and it's also you feel like, well, we've done four now. This isn't going to be the last one. This isn't it. It's not be all and end all. Let's work as hard as we can on it and make it as good as possible. And then we'll just do another one. Do you know what I mean? So it takes off some of the pressure and relieves you to be creatively more explorative than you would otherwise, I reckon.
Okay, Marcus, just a few months ago, you scored a couple of the hottest tickets in town. Harry and Meghan, we know all about the Harry and Meghan wedding and all the rest of it. We all watched it. But can you be honest? Was it a bit boring in there?
No, we were in the church for a couple hours before it happened. So it was quite hot. And you're all dressed up the nines. So I got a bit tired. I got in big trouble for yawning on TV.
Oh, yeah, someone told me about that. Yeah, there was a yawn on YouTube.
I got a lot of text.
A lot of flack.
Oh, God.
It wasn't a full yawn, though, was it? It was a part yawn.
No, it was pretty full, man. It was wide. It was a flycatcher. No, it was a proper yawn. It was really bad. I said to my wife, we're not going to be on TV. No one cares about us. Like, they're getting married. And turns out we were.
Yeah.
Oops.
Now, buddy, you're going to be in Perth next year. We'd love it if you'd come in and have a chat with us. That'd be great.
Let's do it. Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, great.
I don't mind chatting to you because you've got nice warm voices, like I said.
Oh, thank you.
Lock and load.
Well, yeah, man. Go and do what some other times in hospital or whatever you have to get in the next time before then so you've got some stuff to chat about.
Well, maybe not, but yes. Hopefully not, actually.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Good luck with Delta. We'll see you soon.
Cheers, guys.
We'll give all the ticket details.
Chat.
And we look forward to, beyond that, your musical adolescence, album 5 and beyond.
They're wicked. Cheers, guys.
The Big Breakfast with Clazy, Matt and Kimber.
And we're talking, of course, this week it is Mental Health Week. Yesterday was World International Mental Health Day. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of discussion going on right now.
And that's it. That's it. We're joining the push to let's open our hearts and open our ears and talk about these things and hopefully that helps.
Oh,
well, we know it helps.
Oh, yeah. About a decade ago, I came back from travelling overseas, was suffering mild depression, didn't know, but I went and saw a psychologist and was like, something's not right. We talked and talked. I had lots of, bunch of sessions. Yep. And I came out going, I really felt like I was given proper tools and proper things to put in place that I've now used for the last 10 years and have been okay.
Yeah. You've got the right sort of procedures you can work through, and everyone's different.
Absolutely.
And we're opening things up, including the phone lines on 133353. Thanks to everyone who's called. Obviously, can't put everyone to air.
No. Lou's given us a call from Kingsley. Lou, what sort of situation have you had with mental health issues?
Hi, guys. I've been struggling especially with anxiety for over 20 years now and had a, probably about a 2-3 year stint of depression. And at the start of this year, I just got to a point where I was just sick of putting on the Band-Aids. I've been seeing a psychologist for 9 years, which has just been awesome. You know, they're able to let me know and help me find out my triggers. And I've tried so many different things, but I got to a point where I wasn't myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew something else, was happening, something was stopping me. And I actually just had to have a really hard look at myself and be honest, you know, and ask myself some hard questions. And it's, I found the root cause to my anxiety, and I can't tell you how life-changing it has been. Like,
oh.
I'm sorry, I just like...
No, it's wonderful.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, it has just been... Oh, absolutely. Like, I've actually found myself, and I'm just on a mission to help other people, you know, find, you know, understand that there are options and you can get out of it.
Well, that's so important, Lou, because obviously when you're in it, it can feel like you're never getting out, and particularly something like anxiety and depression are just crippling.
Oh, it is. It's debilitating. And you know, what I found was it's actually, you know, we really need to ask ourselves some honest questions about what we do and what we think and how we handle things, because you know, the thing is, like, who are we? We get to points and we're just like, I don't, you know, what are we doing? And it's, we end up doing it for everyone else. We're people-pleasing, procrastinating, perfectionism.
Yeah,
and it's just, it's actually stopping and asking those deeper questions and having the strength and courage to talk about it. And, you know, that it has been hard. It's been very lonely and I've felt so lost. But now I want to, you know, change that stigma and stamp it out and just share the story of me finding my root cause so that other people can see a different perspective and know that, you know, you don't have to just keep putting on the band-aid.
Great.
Thank you, Lou. I mean, you've done that today, just speaking to us today. You can hear it in your voice, and we're so glad that you're feeling that freedom that everyone deserves to have.
Oh, absolutely. It is just awesome. And I just about looking at it differently. And taking a step back and stopping the churn in life.
Hey, Lou, thanks for your honesty, and we're glad that the skies are a lot bluer for you right now.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Lou.
Yeah, Lou from Kingsley right there. We're talking about mental health in this Mental Health Week right
now. Yeah, let's go to, excuse me, Port Kennedy. Joel, hello there, and tell us about your mental health issues.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, thank
you. Yeah, good, Joel.
I've been dealing with mental health issues for a number of years. I'm ex-military. I suffer major depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yep.
Along with a number of physical injuries that sort of, you know, exacerbate all those mental health problems. But it really, it's about having good support around you and accepting who you are. You know, mental health's completely indiscriminatory and it can affect anyone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who you are. It's about accepting that, being aware of your triggers and understanding that you are going to have good and bad days, and you know, really just surround yourself with good support, and people just need to be kinder to themselves, I think.
Yes. Well, Joel, we often talk too about how men find it exceptionally hard to talk to people because it's, you know, we're raised differently. And that's, how did you first seek help? Did you have someone come to you saying, hey, you need some help, or did you notice it yourself and turn to somebody?
I did. I noticed myself. But to be honest, I didn't have the courage to step out and get my own help. I actually needed someone to step in and say, you really need to see someone. And best advice I ever took, to be honest, the moment I started getting really good help from psychologists and psychiatrists, you know, they get your medication right. It might suck that you have to take a pill every day or whatever, but, you know, those things are there to help you. And Just reduce as much stress as you can, and really, my message is just be kinder to yourself, because there's a whole lot of stress put on ourselves.
That's a great message, Joel.
And the curse that is PTSD, mate, it affects so many people, especially ex-military. So you're not alone.
It does, and just a short point to touch on PTSD isn't just a military thing. You know, I see a lot of people arguing about it. It's like, oh, you've got PTSD, but you've never been in a war zone. It doesn't matter.
And it's not a joke.
The symptoms are exactly the same.
Yeah.
However, you know, the circumstances which people come about to get those sort of afflictions are different.
Yep.
Joel, we are so thankful that you shared your story today, and we're glad that you're on that journey to better mental health. And we'd love to send you to the Movember Speakeasy event. So we'll throw you two tickets to go to that so you can go.
That's
and
fantastic.
Yeah, everybody there talking about, well, exactly this stuff, about talking to one another. So thanks for calling.
That's fantastic. No, I appreciate it.
Good on you, mate. Yeah. That's on November 22, hosting that one. So look forward to meeting you, shaking your hand, Joel.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, it's Joel from Port Kennedy, and thanks to Joel, Lou, and everybody who called. Like we said, we would love to talk to everybody.
We would.
Put everyone to air.
And keep talking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Reach out. You know, Lifeline is there, as we just spoke to Dr. Katie Carter, Anglicare. There's plenty of places, so do find someone to talk to.
This'll fill you up. Everything Perth for Brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire-Zee, Matt and Kimber.
Claire-Zee, Matt and Kimber with some Lamal post-Kajagoogoo on Blue Light Thursday this morning. And it is the Big Brekkie with us here for Allianz Home and Motor Insurance.
Imagine if you were an alien and you just heard those words, Lamal post-Kajagoogoo. You'd really be lost.
Well, it sounds like I was speaking like
that. You know
what?
I'm going back home.
What's he talking about?
But even, you know, the term Allianz doesn't even. And the name Allianz doesn't even have that ring to it. You don't quite know what it is, but it makes sense. You know what they do.
I was wondering when we were going to get to this.
Well, it could be the name of a pop band, couldn't it?
Allianz? Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah, or a heavy rock band. But if your thing is your car or your music equipment or whatever it is at home, and their thing is insurance to take care of you.
Yeah, I don't know what the name means, but I know what they do.
And they're looking after us on the show, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're on board, which is brilliant work. You can call Allianz, by the way, if you need them on 131,000.
Ah, Allianz.
The Big Breakfast with Claire-Zee, Matt and Kimber.
Mom is the word. The word is the word that you heard.
Janelle Koenig, good to see you.
It's been a while. Hello. It's been a while. You've had holidays. I had a holiday.
Yep.
We all look amazing.
Well, we weren't all together on holidays. That's probably why.
So I have not caught up with you since the McDonald's party.
True.
No.
You told us that you were doing it.
Yes, I haven't told you the outcome of the party, and it was excellent.
Okay.
It was so good. It went for 90 minutes and people got the hell out of there. It was fabulous.
And it was $10 a kid.
Which is $10 a kid.
Well done, Mum.
Everyone was happy. My daughter said that was the best party I've ever had.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
She's getting it for the next 10 years.
Yeah. 21st, here you come. But get this. Okay. Now, I have a present limit on the present that I give out to other kids.
Yep.
I've spoken about this before. Yep. It's about $20, $25 if I really like the kid.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, when we brought back all of the presents from my 5-year-old, now 6-year-old's party, all of them were kind of, you know, if you've been thumbed through a Kmart catalogue, you kind of know the rough estimate of what people have paid.
Yeah, sure.
Not that I'm judging, okay. But you know.
But you sort
know.
Of
you
are.
Can tell when people are unders, can't you, in particular?
Yeah, and that's fine too, because I want unders.
Mm.
I would like it if every parent gave my child pyjamas.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's what I would like.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I will use those things.
Yeah.
Yes.
So much Play-Doh. But anyway, one of the mums at school gave my kid, it's called a fur reel. Now, it is the size of about a bread bin, and it's a talking robotic dog.
Right.
And when my daughter saw this fur reel, she lost her tiny mind.
And she threw all the Play-Doh out. Stuff all these other presents.
The fur reel then went and dug up the Play-Doh.
Yeah, that's how real it is.
Yeah.
They are worth $80.
Way over.
Way over. Like triple.
Yeah.
And of course, she tore the box open, so I couldn't take it back and say, listen, you've gone overboard.
Yeah.
But I went, you know what? I can't condone this behaviour, because the other thing was that mum's child had a party the next day.
And you had to take back your crayons and colouring book that you got her.
My $20 EB Games voucher.
Got her an Audi.
It was a boy. I had to put my foot down, and I rang her up and I said, listen, babe.
Yeah.
You've gone overboard.
Look, since you moved to Netherlands, this is getting silly.
And they're just trying to be nice and they want to do something special. Yes. And she might really love your daughter.
Yeah, and it's delightful. And I said, I know what this costs. It costs $80. $59 on special right now in the Kmart catalogue, which is still too much. And she said, I've got two words for you, reject shop.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes.
Well done.
That's great. So she paid $25 at the reject shop.
That's good.
And so I'm assuming it will be a faulty toy. Some
it's full of lead.
But I did love that McDonald's party. And my favourite photo of the whole event was watching someone clean it up. I took a photo just to memorise it.
Well done.
Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire-Zee, Matt and Kimber.
Now, the moment you've been waiting for all morning.
Legend.
The great man.
It's Captain Paul's joke of the day.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, not good news. Yeah, I've lost my girlfriend's audio book.
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, now I'll never hear the end of it.
Oh, dear. That girlfriend.
That Big Breakfast catch-up was for Allianz Home and Motor Insurance. Ah, Allianz.
Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire Z, Matt and Kimber. Weekdays from 6 a.m.